to the Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. From 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV radio, we relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Thank you for joining us today. We are doing a pre-recorded interview with Patty Amino. Today is February 25th, 2018, and we want to thank you for joining us. And I want to thank Patty Amino with us. Patty has been with us before. She's a friend of our show and has become a personal friend of mine. She's a very successful anti-nuke activist that was able to spearhead the very first successful and only civil case that was taken action against the nuclear industry. So thank you, Patty, for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
You're welcome, Lonnie. Good to be here.
Yeah. Well, I asked Patty to join us because Patty not only is a successful anti-nuker and went to court in 1998 to succeed in her case and getting a successful case for her community, but she's actually been in the service. She's been an investigator. She is a veteran of our country. And I think, like myself, we're both sort of mortified at the direction that the presidency is taking us right now. So thanks, Patty, for joining us. Really appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thank you. And I thank God we're not alone with the latter comment that you just made.
Yeah, well, you know, I find it completely shocking that we have a person in the White House who, even today, took to Twitter to demean. He calls, you know, Congress people fakers and liars and leakers, and anybody who doesn't agree with him is a terrible person. And it's, like he's even gone after the shooting victims and called them fakers, teenagers. He's calling wounded, traumatized children fakers. It's unbelievable the level of depravity that he's at. And I don't know how, this is one of the things I wanted to pick your brain about. A lot of us are anxious that he has his finger on the nuclear button. You've been in the service. What would that process look like? How easy would it be for, say, the generals to disobey him?
For any military person to disobey a order, you better have good cause. With respect to the nuclear football and the access codes, there's more than the president that hand. There's a fail-safe system there, not only from the Oval Office, but at NORAD as well. Now, because I'm military doesn't mean I know the totality of the ins and outs there. The people in the White House probably don't even know the totality of the ins and outs, so I'm not going to try to put it out as if I do. But trusting, you know, in our government and our systems that were set up to have some fail safes, you know, I would assume with whole heart that they would have some provisions that are there that could stop something. You know, everybody in there who has an ounce of common sense, and I'm not talking about his campaign staff, I'm talking about, you know, current people with the Secret Service with that are handling those codes, not anybody that's retired, but active with the protection of our nation, has really got to wonder inwardly, because they're not going to wear their emotions on their sleeve by any mean. What the hell have we come to in this country? And then you have a huge amount of people at NORAD that would be confirming those codes, and you have to wonder what the hell would do they think about? You know, it's nuts. Mm-hmm. And I keep praying that I don't think that he would do this, because, you know, an idiot can understand that there would be a chain reaction of nuclear weapons, you know, flying through the air, and God knows from who. So, you know, once you let that cow out of the barn, you're not going to get it back in.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of my question is, do you think we can actually even get the cow back? I feel like the cow's in the barn. Like, in your case, in your little town in Pennsylvania, you guys were poisoned by, mm-hmm. I mean, but, you know, I've been shocked to learn after doing all this reporting for the last 3 years, their solution for nuclear waste is to bury it. There's no solution for nuclear waste.
Lonnie, the biggest oxymoron that I've come across in my now 66 years has been the irony of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission having a department, okay, a division that's entitled Nuclear Waste Management.
Right.
Okay, they've never managed nuclear waste except playing a shell game from where it was maybe stored for years and years and years above ground, flat on the ground, possibly leaking, and sending it to another place to be buried, mm-hmm. or stuck in a coal mine, abandoned coal mine, and, you know, or dumped over a cliff, taken out to the woods and, you know, mixed into water, because they used to tell the hired hands that, oh, I think you know it. You know, dilution is the solution.
Mm-hmm.
No, it is not. They used to tell people here, oh, well, it's soluble. No, some, but no, not all, and especially not what NUMEC was working with. And so, you know, it's insanity.
Mm-hmm. It is insanity. I mean, because they're continuing to make it, but the waste that they've already made, they have no, I mean, look, Hanford is essentially falling apart. I mean, one of the whistleblowers gave an interview with Susanna Frame last week under super guise, you know what I mean? They distorted his voice, distorted his image, but he basically said it is a catastrophe out there. They don't know what they're doing. It's just one big mess. This is how, you know, people drove home. They drove home to Richland with plutonium in their cars. They went in to see their families, their kids, the stores. I mean, they spread plutonium all over the place. And I am certain that is probably happens more often than not.
It happened here, too, because NUMEC didn't just have a uranium hexafluoride plant. That was their first plant. Excuse me. But they also three air miles down the road, where the as a crow flies, they were the first commercial plutonium facility constructed in the United States.
Wow!
I think even in the world, and it abutted a dairy farm that we all got our milk free from. I bet you that milk did a body good, huh?
Wow!
You know, these were people, men of science, who knew the half-lives of this stuff, knew the dangers of this stuff, and they cared not.
That's the shocking part.
Yeah, and for what? For what? Because of the money that kept lubing the stuff. If you go to the Oak Ridge Historical Library, some of the documents out there are absolutely jaw-dropping with respect to how they would brainstorm to get more taxpayers' dollars. I mean, the irony of it that they had even a thought, and successful thought, of utilizing this material under an environmental disguise, a pro-environmental disguise. You know, it made me want to gag. But, you know, and it's absolutely no surprise to me that on November 8th, 2012, fast forward, when the National Academy of the Sciences released their report on their very, very years and years long study of the groundwater in the United States, the first paragraph started out like this, and I'm going to do my best to quote it. It's verbatim. Quote, and please get a visual for everybody listening. Get a mental visual of the map of the United States from coast to coast and border to border. Quote, at least 126,000 groundwater sites in the United States are so contaminated they need cleaned up immediately. And of that amount, at least 10% are so complex that cleanup would be delayed 50 to 100 years because the technology does not exist today to clean it up. End quote. Now, you know, in that visualization of that, of our, you know, the map of the United States, coast to coast, border to border, and you have at least 126,000 flag pins going across there, son of a gun, you don't have too much room. So you have to think that all things are relative with respect to groundwater and the water that comes through your tap, the water that you drink, the water that you cook with, the water that you mix the baby food with and you feed your baby that you're cooking. And let's make no mistake, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, don't take the time to try to read and understand this. I got you. You have life. Life goes on, okay? It's a few of us out here that have had no life taking this stuff in.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're cooking this, it doesn't cleared your water up, because every bit of tap water coming through every household in this country has radioactive material in it.
At least tritium. That, even if you have a water filter, it can't filter out tritium.
Uranium, number one, okay? And here's the thing. And then there's your lead. Boiling water gets rid of bacteria like giardiasis. But what it does to heavy metals is reconstitutes it. And so, you know, the food that you're eating and cooking with it, bingo. I mean, you keep doing this and understanding that this stuff is cumulative in the body. You know, it's just, you know, you think about this and you're 66 years old and, you know, and in retrospect, you know, I've already been, I was less than 100 feet from 124 stacks. I'm still here, thank God. You know, minus two brain surgeries and uterine cancer. But the aspect of our future generations, we're going to be seeing artificially genetic mutations thanks, you know, to the nuclear industry. Because we know what we didn't know back during the Cold War, back during the 60s, back during the 70s, even in the 80s. Molecular biologists know with certainty today that not only does exposure to this material mutate the genes, but it actually alters the DNA. And so effectively what we're going to be seeing is artificially induced genetic defects thanks to the nuclear industry. You know, it's crazy.
I think that's why that they're focusing on AI, because they know that they have genetically, I mean, they know that our, you know, what the studies have shown, Timothy Mousseau did studies of birds, and he found, and insects, and they found that within 4 to 6 generations, those species were not able to thoroughly reproduce properly enough to keep themselves sustaining. So I think that's why they're going after the AI, because they know it's a ticking time bomb. Within a few generations, the, you know, fertility rate is going to just drop off the books. We may survive, but we may not be able to reproduce. And I don't know if that's called surviving, like yourself. You had, you know, brain surgery twice?
I still have one brain tumor. I've had two neurosurgeries for one brain tumor. The first one was the biggie, the suboccipital craniotomy. Uterine cancer, you know.
Have they said that's not provable to your exposure to the NUMEC poison?
Even if you go to court, even if there's a settlement, they, you know, because they'll settle out of court when they know the gig is up with them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't admit any wrongdoing.
Hmm.
They don't.
Hmm.
I mean, NUMEC was the name of the plant. That was the original business name. But their former owner, their owners after that, from 1967 to 1971, was Atlantic Richfield Corporation. And after that, from 71 to the still owning the lands, especially down in Parks Township where our nuclear and chemical waste dump is, that's up to right now a $350 million cleanup, there's Babcock and Wilcox, who are not only the owners out at Irwin, Tennessee, which is the only other nuclear fuel processing facility that was ever located in the corporate confines of a town in the United States. And they have, their river, the Nolichucky, is contaminated big time with plutonium.
Do the residents there know that?
Well, I'll tell you what. They've had some people working on that site for years. These ladies were absolutely phenomenal. Barbara O'Neill, she was retired from the United States government, Department of Army, as an information specialist. Oh, my goodness. Phenomenal. You have Trudy Wallach, absolutely phenomenal. These ladies, Linda Cadaldo, Linda Modica, absolutely phenomenal. And these people, they rope-a-doped and tore apart these documents that were coming through there at a level of knowledge and superiority over what the NRC could dish out at their exit meetings down in Irwin. And, of course, that didn't take much because I did it up here. And so, you know, it's crazy. And since our trial in 1998, what Babcock and Wilcox was doing down in Irwin, Tennessee, they started buying up all the homes that were on either side of that plant.
Hmm.
They told the community they wanted to have a security buffer zone which is funny because Babcock and Wilcox never really gave a hoot in hell about security at all. And what they're doing is destroying evidence.
Oh, okay, okay.
Because the homes across the street from the Numac plant and the Apollo, those plants, those places were contaminated. You know, our house I grew up in, that property, was contaminated. And understand that plant had ceased operations in 1978. They were told they were having a serious adverse effect on the surrounding community, and you could hear the suitcases, you know, shutting down and the truck pulled away, but it took a longer time for their decommissioning. You know, I don't care what company, what scientist wants to start their own nuclear industry. With respect to these two plants, NUMEC and NFS Irwin, the last process, one of the last processes, is for the AEC, would have been back then, the AEC, the Atomic Energy Commission, to come in, inspect the place, look around, and approve the license. When they got there, even if they had no knowledge about the location and the demographics of where this plant was situated, once they got there, dear Lord, what the hell were they thinking? With respect to NUMEC, that sat in a valley with inversion, same as Irwin, up against a major waterway that's a source of drinking water, same as Irwin, up against a major roadway, same as Irwin, where the winds are spitting distance from people's residential homes, same as Irwin, valley with inversion. And the original structure was not constructed as a nuclear facility. Abandoned steel mills.
Well, why didn't the AEC do any, which is now the NRC? What was their reasoning then? What did they say? Because I know you've had...
Take your pick. Take your pick. And this has been my conclusion after studying a lot of these things over the years. The Atomic Energy Commission, with the late Dr. Thomas Mancuso and the late Dr. Alice Stort, who worked and were studying the workers, had been studying the workers for years on the effects of their exposures. Believe me, they got dosed up a lot of times on purpose. And we know this from the uranium experimental files. They knew that, but what they didn't know was what the effects would be over the general population. And so here you have NFS Irwin, here you have NUMEC. NUMEC started up before NFS Irwin. You know, these areas, these two towns in Appalachia, in communities that were hungry for jobs, having the government there back then appeared as a, you know, solid business, and people had faith in the government back then.
Yeah,
and so, how does the government operate when they want to know something? They'll study it, and they approach studies by two different methodologies, either by design or by opportunity. Here, you can take your pick. Was it by design that they came into these communities to study, to not only have their production facilities, but to also study the communities over generational period? Because the doctors that were the doctors at the plant were also the doctors in the community, were also the doctors at the schools. You know...
So
it's
in
really
your
disgusting.
Case, in 1998, when you went to court for this thing, how long did it take you guys to win your case?
Well, the case was filed on June the 6th, 1994. We went to case We went to court on August the 10th, 1998. It was 7 weeks long. And the first, Fred Barron, the late Fred Barron, absolutely phenomenal. The first eight plaintiffs out of 200, and this is how he did them, and this was all under one umbrella. It was not a class action. It was a mass action. And so the jury awarded the first eight, ten plaintiffs, it was over 36, maybe between 36 and $38.7 million for the first eight plaintiffs. However, the defendants appealed that. And, you know, that case opens your eyes quite a bit about our justice system. And you think about court as being the arena from where the truth gets exposed and, you know, the truth gets heard. No, because of motions, because, you know, the defendants might think it's inflammatory and the jury shouldn't hear it, even if it's the truth, you know. So, but that being said, the court case was an appeal because Babcock and Wilcox then filed bankruptcy. That was in bankruptcy court. And it was on the guise of all the asbestos cases that, you know, they were getting sued up the yin-yang for. But they just happened to add the NUMEC case, NUMEC radiation case. And so instead of 5 years that their bankruptcy took slightly over 6 years. It was the largest at the Eastern Bankruptcy Court in Louisiana ever filed. And after that, then ARCO split from their decision, whether requirement under contract to, you know, stay with B&W through this thing, and they settled in 2007.
Wow.
And then in 2009, Babcock and Wilcox settled. The case was 14 years long.
Wow.
Fred Barron was dying on his deathbed of cancer and brought this case to fruition. I'll tell you, I get so moved when I think about this, because any other attorney would have sold us out for pennies on the dollar to another firm.
Mm-hmm.
Fred did not.
Hmm.
And, 14.
Well, that was going to be
14 years long.
Question.
And those companies, these contract attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know, I don't understand. Here's the rationale of these corporations. They would rather pay their contract attorneys in billable hours, $3 million a month, basically, than to settle a case. Because when you take that type of payment to contract attorneys and you take it times 12 and then you take it times 14... That's a hell of a lot more than what you're paid out.
And you think they're doing that just because they don't want to acknowledge their liability, acknowledge that they've done something wrong?
Well, you see, they have a cartel, the industry. They're a cartel. And there isn't an insurance company in the world that was going to back them up. So one had to get created. And that was ANI, American Nuclear Insurance, and it's, you know, made up from their money. And ANI has only ever paid out once, and that was in the Silkwood case. Now, they reimbursed Babcock and Wilcox, from my understanding, Babcock and Wilcox and Atlantic Richfield, because after the jury verdict in the first case of the 36, $6 plus million for the first eight test plaintiffs. A&I, contract attorneys, went to Babcock and Wilcox in Atlantic Richfield and said, hey, look, fellas, maybe your limits of liability aren't what you think they are. And their limits of liability were set under the Price-Anderson Act, which is another screw job to, to the people. But
I mean, the worst part about the Price-Anderson Act is not the limits of liability, but to me, the worst part about that act is that it indemnifies anybody. Anybody can knowingly or unknowingly cause harm with nuclear and not go to jail, not be held accountable. Nobody is held accountable for the crimes that they've perpetrated.
These are crimes.
You were in close contact with these opposing attorneys for a long time. This is why I asked you how long it took. So I have been curious. You know, I've read about these various attorneys in all these different cases, like the ones that are fighting the USS Reagan right now, right? What kind of human beings are these? What kind of people are they that can defend nuclear pollution? Who are these people?
The same type of people that has made up the business world, that has sold us out, that is occupying the White House right now, and the Republican Congress. And you know what? Let's not leave some of the Democrats out of that, too.
Yeah.
You know? But it's greed.
Wow.
It's greed. We've been sold out.
Literally, just for money.
You know the irony of all this? I want somebody to tell me. Please, anybody listening, if you know a business or an occupation or a job out there, let's just say, where the worker, not the owner, but the worker, can write themselves a pay raise whenever they want, write it themselves, and get it, please let me know. Please let us all know. We'd like to know that. Congress can write themselves, really. They just go in there and they vote for a pay raise. They vote themselves a pay raise.
Mm-hmm.
Who in the right damn mind is going to say no?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? We really ought to look at that, too, over the years. How many, if any, have ever said no?
Some have. I know some have voted no on that, those pay raises. Lots of them have. I mean, not many Republicans, but a
probably
lot of Democrats.
Probably Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, I think that my congressman did, Pete DeFazio, too. He voted no the last time they voted up a pay raise. I mean, there are some ethical ones, and this is the downside to how the government is run, is the ones, the few that are have, I mean, look what our president's doing on this very day. It's the 25th, and the president is demeaning Adam Schiff as a leaker because he put out a Democratic memo that basically tells the truth, because the Nunes memo was a pack of lies and misinformation. So instead of, keeping quiet about it, they went on the offensive and said that he's leaking information and he's a liar. He regularly leaks. I mean, never in our history have we seen a president demeaning our federal agencies, our elected officials, our previous president. I mean, it is outrageous for me. I honestly do not know how a single person who calls themselves an American can support this guy. I am dumbfounded.
I don't think we've ever seen this level of just pure, unadulterated ignorance.
Yeah.
Ignorance.
Yeah.
You know, there's absolutely...
And he has bad legal advice. I'm going to tell you what. This is the net result of him screwing every good attorney in New York, is he cannot get a decent attorney now. He has super bad legal advice. It's obvious he doesn't understand the law. He has never read the Constitution. He has no idea what the office of the presidency is about. He has no concept of what the government does. I mean, he literally is completely incompetent. It's stunning. And to think that this is the person who's making decisions. I mean, Scott Pruitt with the EPA and... You know, what they're doing with these agencies that are intended to protect us is, frankly, a shock. I mean, America is traumatized right now, and hopefully we'll be able to save ourselves from this guy. I mean, I have this sneaking suspicion, though, that the Russians came here in that meeting a few weeks ago to figure out how to hack the elections in 2018, so that the Republicans will stay permanently in power. That's their agenda. It's a banana republic.
You know, I just, it's the investigator in me. Prior to the election, does anybody remember, do you remember, Lonnie, when just about the whole Eastern Seaboard had power outage on the grid?
Yeah.
You know, what was that?
What do you mean? How is that related?
Well, you know, I'm thinking about how Russian software had made it into our government, number one. And who does this? Who implements this stuff? Who approves this stuff? There had to have been a gateway for a lot of our stuff, number one, to get hacked. A lot of our stuff to get hacked. I don't think we know the length, the breadth, and the depth of the totality of this. And it's going to be ongoing for a long, long time. Long going. You know, but the elections, corrupt. Absolutely corrupt. All the way around.
Yeah, it's beyond the elections. It's really, I mean, this is where we're seeing the curtain is being pulled back to see how next.
Well, the election is why we're here.
Yeah.
Why we're at this point. And the Republicans, while they gave a lot of lip service about how disgusting, blah, 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 this man was, aren't they huggy-kissy with him? They have the power to sit down, because it really doesn't matter who is at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue if you have a Congress that will exercise their muscle on behalf of the people of the United States and the Constitution, first and foremost. They don't care. They've been wiping their feet on our Constitution left and right, and our rights, and the backs of the American people.
That's kind of the shock that I have found, is that the Republicans are, I mean, at what point are they going to stop? Are they going to be humiliated themselves? At what
they don't
point?
Care about humiliation, because they are padded with money that they have been getting on the take. You know, I mean, the special interest money, the Koch brothers. I can't even stand.
The singer.
I can't even stand to think about them.
You know, Greg Palast did a great movie. He redid his movie to reflect the 2016 election, called The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, the stolen election that wasn't. And he snuck into a party with this multi-billionaire named Singer, who was one of Trump's primary supporters, right? Mm-hmm. And basically what they've done is they're caging people. They're kicking people off the voter rolls, making it very, very difficult for anybody who might vote democratically to vote. They're just literally scrubbing the voter rolls. I mean, millions of people were scrubbed in 2016.
There's one way to nip this voting in the bud, okay? To nip it right in the bud.
Ballots.
And we have got to implement, you and I have spoke about this before, we have got to implement exactly the same policy that we did for the people in their voting in Iraq. Fingerprint.
Wouldn't that be great?
You know, really, because there's not going to be any resurrection of any dead person unless they're taking a hand with them. But no, you have a fingerprint card, a voter's card. You stick it in the machine. But that alone won't get you in to vote. You put your actual finger up on the screen. Bingo. Okay?
Put your finger on the screen into a machine that flips the votes for the GOP, it's still, you know what I mean? We need a paper ballot. Like here in Oregon, we have mail-in ballots. I think that is a really good way to go because you have a written piece of paper. Yes, it's still counted by machines. There's some room for error, but we have a paper tracing. And I think, but frankly, the fact that the GOP is leading the way on, you know, this says a lot about who they are and what kind of, quote, Americans they are. They support a president who has literally lied to our faces and continues to lie to our face on a daily basis.
The man is crazy. He's certifiable. I said this during the campaign when he came out, that the man is absolutely nuts. And I'm wondering why the hell, here's individuals, I don't care, Trump or whoever, why the hell don't we have a psychological testing to know if our president, who has the codes to the nuclear football, that could send people in to die at any time, the military in to die at any time, that can write executive orders, as we've seen, after executive orders after executive orders. Why the hell don't we have a litmus test to see if they have sound mental health? You know, there's something really going on in that brain of his. You know, it's sad. I grew up, I was born in 1951, so I remember, you know, some semblance of decorum and decency. I remember President Eisenhower giving his farewell speech on television and warning the American people of the industrial military complex. I remember that vividly. Mm. And then President Kennedy and all those thereafter. Even George Bush, aren't we craving his return, even, you know, in place of this one?
I mean, for real, that's the shocking part. It's like we've devolved to this position where, you know, George Bush Jr. no longer looks like, you know, completely incompetent. He looks competent. And that, to me, this all gets back to this whole thing about nuclear. Like, we're making decisions about nuclear waste. We're making decisions about, you know, like, one of the things that they're really, I read an article a couple of weeks ago on, I think it was on this radio show, where the military is now deciding they're going to put those small nuclear reactors on their military bases. That's where the funding is going to start going. That's what they want to do. They want to develop small nuclear reactors on their bases. I mean, the insanity of where we're going with the whole issue of... I read an article this morning that said that all of our nuclear facilities are safe. They have emergency plans. If we ever had anything like this, anything like Fukushima ever happened where we had an earthquake, they were talking about San Onofre nuclear safety. Right. You know, and they were talking about the safety of the storage facilities, and they were saying, you know, well, some people feel like our canisters are too thin. They're definitely too thin. They're half an inch thick. If we had a big earthquake on Southern California Edison could do all their earthquake preparedness they want to do, but they are not going to be prepared for leaking, busting nuclear tanks if we have an earthquake. And the way that they have them stored is they have these half-inch thick canisters, and then they're surrounded by another canister. So if they started leaking or having some type of a catastrophe, we probably wouldn't see it for a little while. That's the frightening part.
The thing that gets me is there's absolutely nothing that they can construct today that is going to contain this material. That's for right. Even the half-life of what this material
That's right. Well, they say they're building these facilities that say what WIP was supposed to last 1,000 years, it didn't even last 100.
Look, they can't predict this stuff. We haven't even dealt with this stuff for 100 years.
Right.
You know, and this is the irony of it, and it's the irony of that no good for nothing agency, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Make no mistake, it's a government agency. It's being paid by the taxpayers' dollars. Okay, but they're not number one. They are not a part of the cabinet. Their whole board, their commissioners, are made up of people from the industry. There are only one time that didn't happen, and that was Yasko, and you see what happened to him, okay? And Jesus, what? They're an adjunct to the industry. They are proficient in lying.
Yeah.
And you sit down and you talk to them. You have a document in front of you. That's what I love about these Cold War sites, you know, because those documents, they didn't get into the technical editing that they do today. And they're blatant. And then they'll come out and tell you, oh, well, that's what that document says, but here's what they meant.
Right.
No, that's not what they meant. You know, It's insanity. It's insanity. They have been insulating this industry because of two things. Jobs, because there's jobs there. And two, to be able to bleed the taxpayers' money at a huge amount. We are subsidizing this crumbling nuclear reactor nightmare. Well, Three Mile Island. We've been subsidizing that. Yeah, when nuclear came on the scene, it was built up and sold to the American people as this is going to be cheap energy for us. Does anybody know? Does anybody ever had a rollback on their electric bill? You know, it's never going to happen.
Well, not only that, it's not only just a rollback on their electricity bill, but like I know here, Bonneville Power Station, we have the Columbia Generating Station that is, Bob Alvarez did a 30-page report showing that it is losing 500. He thought for sure that would force them to close it down because they're mandated to have a balanced budget, right?
They're losing $500
million a year. And that amount of money is being passed on to the ratepayers. And they're still keeping it going. Even though it's a losing entity, they're keeping it open. And I think the reason is because they don't want to admit that it's a failing entity. This is why they go kicking and screaming. Because as long as they keep it open, those people that work, not the people there, but the people who are the owners of those corporations make billions of tax dollars. What industry can lose $500 million a year? What industry can do that?
They're losing it on paper, but essentially they're not losing it. They're not losing. Look, even their cleanups, and you know that these companies, these corporations, don't want to clean up. They don't want to send this stuff to a licensed facility and pay that money. But they get at least a 35% reduction in their taxes on their cleanup costs.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's old. That's been in effect, so it could actually even be more now. You know, it's insanity. And Babcock and Wilcox, when they did the cleanup of the plutonium plant, okay, they went in and sued the United States government for their costs on the cleanup. And believe me, their cleanup was anything but a cleanup.
Hmm.
You know, how is this even allowed? It's unthinkable. It leaves you basically speechless to understand that our Congress has allowed this to go on. To allow the American people, because they know a whole hell of a lot more than we know. They've seen a whole hell of a lot more than we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's documents and studies that'll never see the light of day. The American people will never see them. And, you know, so they know. They know how dangerous our crumbling reactors are right now. We know it. So you can just imagine the level of knowledge that they have. And so what does the Nuclear Regulatory want to do with the waste that's produced at these reactors? Because they've never done anything to manage this waste, contrary to Waste Management Division at the NRC. They want to leave it there under their waste confidence doctrine and leave it there for 1,000 years. They said it would be safe.
Right. Well, they want to leave it there because they don't have any place to put it. Their idea
this is high-level waste.
They used to want to put it in WIPP, W-I-P-P, but they can't. The WIPP is not a functional. They say that it's working, but it's fraught with problems. It's collapsing. It's built in salt domes, which is it's not functional. So they have mandated that they keep it there on their sites. That's why they're not putting it anywhere. But I mean, that's the shock. When you think about it, this is their solution. Their big solution is either leave it on site or you move it somewhere and you bury it underground. But that's not the way they bury it isn't actually resolving it, because eventually it's going to collapse like it does at Hanford, like it has at WIPP. They don't really have a solution. They're all these years, 50 years of doing this, 60 years of doing it, they still have no real permanent solution. Nothing.
But there is, you know why? Because they haven't put 1 cent, not 1 cent, into the research to neutralize the stuff, to come up with some way to neutralize it. If it can be conceived and thought, it can be conceived. What you need are the brains and the financing for this research.
Wow.
You know, going in space and having a space station and having jetpacks was science fiction years ago. And look at what Elon Musk just did with those booster rockets. Oh, I was thrilled when I saw those things land pinpoint on the launch pad. If it can be conceived and thought, it can be conceived. Brain power, but they haven't done this. You know why? Because they don't want to get to the point of where they're going to clean it up. Why? Because it's cause and effect. Because you have a quagmire here of cause and effect. Cause and effect to what it has done to our groundwater. At least 126,000 groundwater sites.
You know,
cause and effect of the potential of liability.
You'd think that the people in the Department of Agriculture would really want to pick up this mantle, because it is affecting the agriculture of this country. But they completely.
The Department of Agriculture, Lonnie, or any other agency, is not going to do a damn thing. And the reason why is because of politics. Every time a politician changes, so does the policies.
Mm-hmm. As we're seeing. As we're seeing.
Yeah, well, look over the years from the EPA's birth, okay, and they're the only agency that has an enforcement section, to currently right now. They're on their way to be extinct. They've been long on their way to be extinct. And that came after 1989. After they did their sting, along with the FBI, on Rocky Flats and Santa Suzanne, woo!
Wow!
They were really put on the cutting block. You know, they were a good agency at one time.
It's kind of a shock, like, and I think this is why people check out, because we realize, like, really, what are we going to do about it? I mean, even to affect any change that the corporatocracy wants to have in this country. It's almost virtually impossible. We can't, you know, I know No Nukes Northwest, we're going to be conducting on 3/11/2018. We're going to meet up at, it's on a Sunday, but we decided we're still going to go to the Japanese embassy in Portland and build a shrine and protest. Because after 7 long years of Fukushima spewing out radioactivity into the ocean, and now they're talking about dumping all those containers. And that's what the IAEA has recommended. Just dump those tanks. Once you treat it as much as you can, dump it into the ocean. That's their new plan. So we've got 7 years of this, and the entire world is still ignoring it. So this is why people feel like we're wasting our time even talking about it, because it's as if they just don't, they have their blinders on, they have their ears plugged, all they see is dollar signs, and that's the only thing they care.
Exactly, with their hands out, because we should have been, we knew. Look, people want to cite Three Mile Island. They're, you know, this is when you talk about different events, you know, Three Mile Island, big event, the Chernobyl, big event, okay? Before Three Mile Island, there was Walt's Mill in Pennsylvania.
Hmm.
And, you know, as classified as that's been,
Walt's Mill.
Been told that we had a meltdown there.
What's it called?
Walt's Mill. W-A-L-T-Z. Walt's Mill.
I've never heard of it.
Owned by Westinghouse.
Okay.
Right. They kept a lid on it. I have documents from that place.
Like Santa Susana was the first nuclear meltdown we've ever had in the country. That was out in Chatsworth. And you know what the government did? They built houses. Chatsworth is, you know, it's right where Magic Mountain is in Los Angeles. That's exactly right where it is, in Simi Valley. So, Hey, guess what? We've got about 2.5 minutes left. So I just want to kind of give you the heads up. This has certainly gone pretty fast.
Well, listen, let me flip the script here before we leave. I want to let everybody know that these young people out of Florida and across this country, their movement that they are doing in the shadow of the horrific mass shooting in Parkland, Florida, what they're doing is absolutely phenomenal, and we need to back them up.
Yeah.
Lonnie, I can't tell you, this has taken me back to 1969.
Yeah.
During the moratoriums, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I agree completely with their energy and their determination to actually make a change and make this one be the one that makes a difference is commendable. And our president is right now demeaning them, calling them fakers and calling them liars.
And actors.
Yeah. It's outrageous. I mean,
yeah.
But you know what? This is how you control. This is how the fascists take over a government, is they break people up. They break up the country and divide people up. And that, they have been very, very effective. So it's so outrageous. But that, I agree with you. And hopefully they'll keep their momentum up. And I believe that they will. And I believe that they will continue to be a force to be reckoned with that is going to hopefully be a blue wave. Because in my view, the Republicans' greed is, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of bad Democrats, but you know what? In general, the Democratic Party stands up and makes an effort for equity, whereas the Republicans, what they say, they're trying to cut out 10% of the budget at Hanford. They want to knock down 10% of the budget for the cleanup effort at Hanford.
Hanford is a nightmare for the entire West Coast waiting to happen. I mean, they're running those pumps in perpetuity, and you have to keep on asking yourself, what if?
That's
what if
right.
This happens? What if that happens?
What happens
just
when
like
we
every
have
place
a big
else?
Earthquake? Exactly. Hey, Patty, we have about 30 seconds left. I want to thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Patty Amino and Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. Put your courage feet on. Please take some action. Thanks for joining us, Patty. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Lonnie, for having me. And folks, keep the stars and stripes flying. That's our Constitution.
Yes, exactly. And we'll talk with you guys soon. Take care, you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.